Thank you all very much for attending this morning's talk. Those of you here in the temple and those who are listening on the internet, welcome, welcome, welcome. Today's verse will be Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 16th chapter, and I'll be talking on, well, we'll start with verse number 20. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I will be doing the translations of a few of the verses only, and then I will come to the, I believe it's the 21st, in which we will, excuse me, not the 21st, but the 23rd, in which we will all chant together. So going to the translation of verse number 20. Thereafter, Parashurama joined his father's head to the dead body and placed the whole body and head upon Kusha grass. By offering sacrifices, he began to worship Lord Vasudev, who is the all-pervading supersoul of all the demigods and of every living entity. So here we have the head of Jamadagni. It has been severed by the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna in retaliation or in reprisal for Parashuram killing their father, Kartavirya Arjuna. So now Jamadagni, the father, at this moment has no head. Next verse, number 21, translation. After completing the sacrifice, Lord Parashuram gave the eastern direction to the Hota as a gift, the south to the Brahma, the west to the Advaryu, the north to the Udgata, and the four corners, northeast, southeast, northwest, and southwest, to the other priests. These are all priests, names of different priests who have different functions in the sacrifice. He gave the middle to Kashyapa, and the place known as Aryavarta to the Ubhadrashta. Whatever remained, he distributed among the Sadasyas, the associate priests. There's a small purport of one sentence. The tract of land in India between the Himalaya Mountains and the Vindhya Hills is called Aryavarta. So now we will begin the 23rd Tata cha avabritta snana viduta ashesha kilbataha sarastvatyam mahanadyam vyabraha. Did I miss a word? Oh, Mahanadyam. Is that it? Mahanadyam. Thank you. Vyabraha. Iva Amshuman. Tatashchavabritasnanam. Vidutas shesha kilbishaha sarasvatam mahanadyam Reje Vyabraha Ivam Shuman Tatashchava Bratasnana Viduta Shesha Kilbisa Sarasvatyam Mahanadyam Veje Vyabra Ivam Shumam Tatashcha Vabratas Snana Viduta Shesha Kilbasa Sarasvatyam Mahanadyam Reje Vyabra Ivam Shumam. Please chant. Ladies, please. Tataha. Thereafter, cha, also, avabritta snana, by bathing after finishing the sacrifice, viduta, cleansed, arshesha, unlimited, kilbishaha, whose reactions of sinful activities, Sarasvatyam, on the bank of the great river Sarasvati, Mahanadyam, one of the biggest rivers in India, Reje, Lord Parashuram appeared, Vyabraha, cloudless, Iva Amshuman, like the sun. Translation, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, having completed the ritualistic sacrificial ceremonies, Lord Parashuram took the bath known as the Avabrita Snana, standing on the bank of the great river Sarasvati, cleared of all sins, Lord Parashuram appeared like the sun in a clear, cloudless sky. So please repeat, thereafter, having completed the ritualistic sacrificial ceremonies, Lord Parashuram took the bath known as the Avabrita Snana. Standing on the bank of the great river Sarasvati, cleared of all sins, Lord Parashuram appeared like the sun in a clear, cloudless sky. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 3.9, Yagyar tat karmanon yatra loka yam karma bandana, which means, quote, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. Karma bandana refers to the repeated acceptance of one material body after another. The whole problem of life is this repetition of birth and death. Therefore, one is advised to work to perform yajna meant for satisfying Lord Vishnu. Although Lord Parashuram was an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he had to account for sinful activities. Anyone in this material world, however careful he may be, must commit some sinful activities, even though he does not want to. For example, one may trample many small ants and other insects while walking on the street and kill many living beings unknowingly. Therefore, the Vedic principle of pancha yajna, five kinds of recommended sacrifice, is compulsory. In this age of Kali, however, there is a great concession given to people in general. Yajyai sankirtana prayar yajjanti hi sumedasaha. That's from the Bhagavatam 11.5.32. We may worship Lord Chaitanya, the hidden incarnation of Krishna. Krishna varnam tvisha krishnam. Although he is Krishna himself, he always chants Hare Krishna and preaches Krishna consciousness. One is recommended to worship this incarnation by chanting the Sankirtan Yajna. The performance of Sankirtan Yajna is a special concession for human society to save people from being affected by known or unknown sinful activities. We are surrounded by unlimited sins, and therefore it is compulsory that one take to Krishna consciousness and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Om Agyana Timiranda Syaganjana Shalakaya Chakshud Unmuritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances at his lotus feet. So just to recap a little, it never hurts to rehear some of these glorious and most wonderful pastimes. We go back a few verses. And it's very interesting that Revata, the wife of Jamadagni, went down to the river to fetch some water in a pot, and she noticed that there was a Gandharva, and he was frolicking with his girlfriends or wives or whatever. And he was obviously very attractive. Many Gandharvas are. They're attractive facially and in body. They also have very beautiful voices. They sing. Gandharva Loka is especially for those persons who like to sing all day, and they can sing mantras night and day. So she was there, and she glanced at him and then glanced again and glanced a little bit more. And she was just quite normal. She was a human being, and she became somewhat attracted. And she forgot her Vaishnav etiquette or her Vedic etiquette, and that she should have turned away instead of kept looking at him, admiring him, and in a sense almost wishing she were one of the girls who were frolicking in the water with him. So she then returned to the ashram, and lo and behold, who was waiting for her but Jamadagni. Now, Jamadagni was a quite advanced sage. He had some of the various mystical powers, and one of them is he could obviously see in the distance. That's a psychic power. It's called clairvoyance, and you can see someone thousands of miles away if you know, if you're tuned in to that person's particular wavelength. So he obviously saw her, he felt her feelings, saw where her eyes were landing, and in effect realized this was very, very unfortunate and very wrong. I'm sorry. And she should have stopped it in the bud as soon as it happened. She should not allow her eyes to not only wander over this particular romantic scene that was taking place, but she should not have continued focusing on it. She should rather have turned away and gone on with her business of fetching the water and taking it back, but she did not. So this was a breach of, a very serious breach of matrimonial etiquette. In effect, it was a sort of a vicarious adultery. So Jamadagni, knowing this, he looked at her rather angrily and chastised her for what she had done. She placed her hands together, bowed her head, and he said, "For this, you must be punished, because you knew better, and you should not have done what you did. So your punishment is you must die." So there were, I think, four sons, correct me if I'm wrong, and one of the sons, he said, "Kill your mother." So he looked at his mother, and he looked back at his father, and he said, "Kill her?" He says, "Yes, kill her. I can't do it." So he went to the second son, says, "You kill your mother." And he looked at his mother. You know, mother is a symbol of love, symbol of affection, symbol of warmth. So many warm and kind and loving days spent with mother. Food she prepared, the hugs she gave him. You don't forget those so easily. "Kill your mother." "No, sorry, I can't do it." Third, "Kill your mother." "Can't do it. Sorry." Finally it came to Parashuram. "Kill your mother." He was getting really angry. "Yes, my lord." I don't remember exactly how he killed her, but I think he cut her head off. But is that correct? Huh? How did he kill her? Cut her head? Yeah, okay. So he chopped her head off. Think about it. Think if Krishna came down and said to you, "Chop your mother's head off." Not easy deal. Not easy. But of course, Parashuram was not an ordinary person. He was an advanced soul. Very advanced, actually. He was Shaktivesha Avatar. There are two kinds of avatars. There's avatar or incarnation, direct and indirect. And Parashuram was known as an indirect. And he was that's an empowered incarnation. Krishna is not an empowered. He did not receive power. His power was not derived. It is original. It is native. It is inherent. Whereas the Shaktivesha avatars, such as Narada Muni, he's empowered. He's an incarnation of devotion and love. Well, the four Kumaras are incarnations of knowledge. Or Prithu Maharaj is an incarnation of earthly maintenance. He can maintain things very well. Vyasadeva is a Shaktivesha avatar, a literary incarnation. Krishna is simply God. Balaram is a complete, direct incarnation of God. The Vasudeva is an incarnation of God. direct. Sankarshan, direct. Pradyumna, correct. Aniruddha, direct. These are all direct incarnations. The three Vishnu incarnations, Mahavishnu, and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. And what is the second one? Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Second. These are all what are called direct incarnations of God. They are full. They have the full complement of Krishna's energy with slight differences. Krishna has 100%, and then Lord Vishnu has 96%, and there's Lord Shiva, who's kind of a mixture of indirect and direct, and so forth. So, therefore, different individuals, such as anyone here, might become very, very advanced and become empowered in some particular area. Empowered means you have a very special ability, special talent, or special power to do things in such an extraordinary way that most people could never even come near you. And such a person was Parashuram. He was empowered to kill evil, demoniac persons without the slightest compulsion, without any remorse. That was his job, to get rid of evil in the world. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, Krishna says, at that time I descend myself, to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So that is one of the duties of Krishna, one of the activities of Krishna. He doesn't really need to come personally. He can have his demigods do it, or his sub-demigods do it. Material energy, they administer the material energy to take care of all these different karmic reactions. But sometimes Krishna chooses to either directly come or indirectly come through his Shaktivesha avatar. For example, our own Srila Prabhupada is a Shaktivesha avatar. Of course, that's my opinion and quite a number of other persons' opinion. He did the extraordinary. He did the unusual. He came here alone. There was no talk of bhakti yoga. There was no talk of Krishna. There was no talk of love of God. There was no talk of devotion. And yet he composed 60 volumes of work, established 100 temples, and took people off the street who were hippies and may change them into happies. So he did the unusual. And even in the time of great adversity and difficulty, physical, physiological, Srila Prabhupada did not shirk. He pushed on. He wanted to die serving Krishna. His last breath would be for Krishna. So that's very unusual, not common. Plus the fact that he was 80, 81 years old, and he was doing that. Plus there were quite a number of disorders, physical, which were going on, which he did not allow to affect him, disturb him, stop him from fulfilling his mission of spreading Krishna consciousness. A great soul like Srila Prabhupada realizes he's an eternal servant of Krishna. He loses interest in everything except serving Krishna. He's always thinking of Krishna. He's always trying to figure out new ways to spread the holy name of Krishna. And he understands that his only business is to spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Such a person should be understood to be a Uttama Adhikari. That's above Madhyama Adhikari and above Kanishta Adhikari. These are lower levels of Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada was on the Uttama level. And an Uttama Adhikari should be recognized and accepted as a spiritual master. So coming back to the point is that Parashuram, I should have mentioned that before he chopped off his mother's head, he did pray to his father and said, I would like to be able to ask one prayer, beg one prayer after I do this. The father said, okay. So after he chopped off his mother's head, and also he was requested to chop off his brother's head, all four brothers, I think, or three brothers were dead. Mother was dead. It was just a very bloody mess. So he then prayed to his father, who, as I said, had mystical powers, and said, please, please bring them back to life. Well, he brought them back to life, and the brothers were there, and the mother was there. So I simply wanted to bring this out. What is so important about this, we all can learn from it, is that Parashuram, he showed us how devotion to duty, especially when it comes from a highly advanced soul like his father was, is above and beyond all personal considerations. Parashuram simply put aside, yes, he loved his mother just as much as his brothers loved his mother. She treated him lovingly, kindly, sweetly. He could not forget these, yet devotion to duty. Do or die. If I have to, as long as it has come from a higher source, a pure source, which is his father, Jagadagni, who became one of the seven predominant sages of those seven stars that go around the pole star. Jagadagni became one. So, therefore, we will be asked, especially we have marathon Christmas, we will be asked to do things, sometimes stay out later, sometimes work a little harder. And we have to be thinking that this is for the pleasure of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada quotes that very verse, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction. Otherwise, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction. And in this way, you will be freed from the bondage of work. Every time we work in the material world and we gain some pleasure, we become a little attached to the pleasure. And the more we repeat that particular pleasure, the more attached we become to that pleasure. Until a time comes when we die, and we die with the thought of that particular pleasure in our mind, which causes us or propels us to be reborn into another body, whereby or by which we can continue to enjoy that pleasure. So what this verse that I just quoted says is that, offer whatever you do to me. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away. Krishna says, please do it for me. Don't do it for yourself. Although you may be tasting something or you may be getting some honors, do it for me. Give the credit to me. Give the pleasure to me. Offer it all to me. And if you do that, you'll be freed from the bondage of work and its auspicious and inauspicious or inauspicious results. And by this principle of renunciation, give, 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 until there's no sense of me anymore. There's only Krishna to give to, to give to, to give to. So one's mind is always thinking, for example, you're distributing books, you're thinking in terms of, I'm offering this for you, my Lord. Because I know it pleases you that these persons who get this book, and if they read this book, they'll be reading about you, and they'll be inspired to come to understand what you are about, and to know the highest goal in life, and how they are wasting their lives, and how they could be fulfilling their lives by serving you. So yes, I offer this to you, my dear Divine Lord, so that others may grow. And I know that pleases you. So if we keep our mind on Krishna during the course of our activities, this makes the activity more and more relishable, not only to the devotee, but relishable to the Lord. The pure devotee, Krishna says, is always within the core of my heart. I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. The devotee does not know anything else but me, and I do not know anything else but him. I have so much affection for him. I'm sold out to him. This is Krishna's mood. This is his feeling. And although we sometimes may not feel that affection, that surge, that envelopment of Krishna's love upon us due to our lack of sensitivity or our absorption in other things, it's always there. And it continues increasing to the degree that we surrender unto the Supreme Lord. As Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So, coming back to this particular point, Parashuram was very dutiful. He was very dedicated. He understood what a father's or a great authority's word meant, and it was non-different from truth. And by him executing his father's will, he was in conformity with, in sync with the truth, with God. So that is what we learn. One of the things that I know I learned from that, and that obedience to authority is a very important part of growing in Krishna consciousness. Disobedience, working grudgingly, indifferently, thoughtlessly, without love, does not help us. However, even if you do devotional service, sorry, in that mood, everyone is benefited in some way. Some are getting, you know, a score of 1 or 2. Some are getting 4 or 5. Some are getting 8 or 9. Some are getting 10. Depending as we surrender, my Lord, this is for you. May you be pleased to accept this. Krishna says, whatever you offer me in love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. And I will relish it more and more to the degree that you saturate your offering with pure love. And what is that pure love? My dear Lord, may you be pleased by this. May you relish it. May you delight in it. May you become even more ecstatic than you all know or you already are or normally are. And this is what, of course, the whole mood of the gopis were. They knew that Krishna was blissful. He always had that beautiful smile on his face and wide open lotus eyes. But they wanted to increase his pleasure in any which way they possibly could. Some of them cooked. Some of them played on instruments, music. Some of them sang for him. Some of them massaged his feet. Everyone was eager, and some of them just made up their faces so beautiful, one might think that they're very vain, but that was never the idea. It was for Krishna's eyes to see that which was beautiful. He loved looking at them, and the more beautiful they could adorn themselves, look, that they were pleased to see Krishna smile because he enjoys the beauty of their faces. Not, oh, look how beautiful I am. I'm so wonderful. I'm better looking than all the other gopis. That was never the idea. Never, because that's an egotistical idea, a vain idea. And they were actually completely surrendered. Surrendered so much so that all they could think of is Krishna. And we know when Krishna, on that Ras Lila night, and he disappeared from them, all they could think of every moment, every second, Krishna, where is Krishna? Oh, Arjuna tree, have you seen the son of Maharaj Nanda? Oh, Nag Champa tree, have you seen the son of They're talking to trees. They're talking, oh, Mother Earth, Krishna's feet have stepped all over you. Do you know which way he has gone? Please tell us, we can't live without Krishna. So they're talking like that. They're so absorbed, they're so steeped, they're so completely entranced in their love for the Lord. This should be our ambition. We should be aspiring like that. Prabhupada didn't write these books for us merely to read them and then forget them. He wrote them so that we can have some point or target of aspiration. And that we should, of course, pray to have that purity, that love, that inner yearning. And it will come. Krishna wants more than anything to have us closer and closer to him. So, coming back to this particular, coming back to this particular verse, sorry. So, what happened in the course of activities, the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, who was a big king, and who Parashuram killed, he had many sons, And those sons were filled with vengeance. They wanted to kill Parashuram. Or if not kill him, then certainly kill he who was very dear to Parashuram, which is his father, Jamadagni. And so one day, Jamadagni was just sitting in meditation. His eyes were half open, half closed. His wife was nearby. And those sons of Kartavirya, Arjuna, entered with the full intention to just cut his head off. And she pleaded, Revata, her name was, she pleaded, please don't kill my husband. Please don't do this. I beg you, don't do this. They ignored her. They disregarded her. They couldn't care less about her pleading words. And so they just chopped his head off and left. So finally, Parashuram, he came in and he found out what had happened. And he became very, very angry at this, so angry that he decided, of course, to kill all those sons. He also decided that he would rid the world of evil, of the demons, of persons who were in violation of God's will. That this world would have to be cleansed. It would have to be purged. And it would have to become a better place to live in. Otherwise, people would just go around doing anything and everything they wanted, whimsically, independently, uncaringly, thoughtlessly, coldly. Didn't matter. As long as it satisfies my desire, that's all that counts. So that's what Parashuram wanted to do. So firstly, he wanted to restore the life of his father. And he performed a sacrifice. And in this sacrifice, which was successful, he then had his father's head put back onto the body, and his father came back to life. It's very good, nice, when you have a son that powerful. If somebody kills you, your son, he just does a few nice mantras and brings you back to life. So this was the situation in this circumstance. Just to talk a little bit more about Parashuram, he's very well known throughout the Vedic literatures, especially in Mahabharata. There was a situation there, I'm sure that all of us may know this, but it's a very, very intriguing story. In the Mahabharata, as we know, Karna was born from the sun god. And the reason he was born is that Kunti, when she was about 13 years old, had received from Durvasa Muni a blessing, a boon, that if she chanted a particular mantra to a particular demigod, the demigod would come and impregnate her, because Durvasa Muni knew that in the future there would be some problem. And the problem was there later on, that her husband, Pandu, was cursed that if he had any sexual intercourse with either of his wife or any female, then he would die immediately, because of the fact that he shot an arrow at two deer who happened to be yogis in disguise. And he shot them while they were in the process of sexual intercourse. So one of the deer, just before he died, he cursed Pandu that he would die also if he did that. So, of course, he would lead a celibate life for many, many years thereafter. So Karna was born of the sun. So when Kunti gave birth to her, she was given instructions to put the baby in a basket, put it on the Aswa River and let it flow with the current to the Yamuna River, the Ganga River. And then the basket was found by Ati Ratha, who was a charioteer. And he took it in. He and his wife had been praying for a child, that they could not produce a child themselves. So they raised Karna in a family which was known as a Suta family. for those who don't know what a Sukta family is, means that the father is a Kshatriya and the mother is a Brahmin. So Sukta is kind of a mixed caste, or in many cases we refer to as an outcast. Anyway, Karna was raised in that family, and he wanted to be a full-out Kshatriya, not Sukta. And actually, in truth, he was, because his father was his biological father was the sun god. But he didn't know. He had no knowledge of this. Anyway, what happened was that as he grew up, his feeling and desire to want to be a king, because after all, he has all the qualities, physical, mental, emotional, of a king. He's born of a great king, King Surya. The demigods are all administrators of the universe. They are Kshatriyas. And yet he was not a king, and that bothered him very much. So he wanted to gain the weapons which would enable him to defeat any king. And he knew from Dronacharya, because he was in one of the archery class of Dronacharya, that Dronacharya knew those weapons, those mystical weapons, but would not teach. He would not teach them to Karna. He felt that Karna's character was not worthy of having those, and that he might misuse them. It's a very important point when you have power, that you must, if you're going to give it or share it with someone else, it has to be with a very responsible person. So to give it means to be highly responsible. And being responsible means to give it to someone who will use it properly, beneficially, and helpfully. So he refused to give it to Karna. Well, Karna was really upset. He was teed off. And he was determined to get some of those astras, like the Brahmastra. So he decided that he would find Parashuram. He would find Parashuram, from whom Dronacharya got his, and Bhishma Dev got his astras. So what he would do is he would pretend to be a Brahmin. He learned many of the Brahmin's mantras. And then he traveled up to high up in the mountains, Mahendra Mountains, I believe, where Parashuram, who had already retired from his killing business, and he begged the mercy of Parashuram to please accept him as a student, that he is a... And Parashuram says, "What is your caste?" And he said, "I'm a Brahmin." Well, he lied. And Parashuram said, "You're a Brahmin?" He says, "Yes, I'm a Brahmin." Of course, he had these big shoulders, you know, with Brahmins generally are not built so well. I mean, he looked like he's one of these cover guys of muscle power. Big forearms, you know, gigantic, had a hulking stride. So anyway, Parashuram, he served Parashuram very lovingly, very warmly, kindly. There wasn't anything he wouldn't do for Parashuram. So what happened was that one day, when they were out walking, Parashuram said, "I'm very tired. I'd like to just lie down, take a few winks, and then we can move on." So Karna sat down with his back against the trunk of a tree, and he crossed his legs, and Parashuram put his head on the legs of, or the lap, and what happened there is that he went to sleep. As he was sleeping, an insect crawled up on the thigh of Karna, and it had these sharp teeth, and it began to bore and bore and bore. Now, any human being would just say, "Ah, ah, ah!" You know, he'd start screaming out. It would normally be extremely painful. But Karna just, you know, grit his teeth. He didn't want to. Another wonderful quality of Karna. He did not want to disturb the sleep of his master. He was willing to bear any and every kind of pain necessary just so that his master would not be disturbed. So finally some blood started pouring down. The blood started pouring down his leg and it started dripping on Parashuram's chin. And he woke up. And he looked around. He saw the blood dripping around. He says, what's going on? And he saw the insect. Immediately, he killed, just by his power, he killed that insect. And he looked at Karna and he said, how did you learn how to bear such pain? This is not the business of a Brahmin. So he says, well, you know, I just did. He says, you just did. Are you a Brahmin or are you something else? Well, are you a Brahmin? Well, I'm a what? What? Sutta. You are a Sutta, so you lied to me. Just to get all these wonderful weapons, the Brahmastra and this and that. He said, well, here's how I'm going to award you. I will allow you to keep the Brahmastras and all the other weapons, but one day you will meet your rival who is equal to you in power. And you will be in an inconvenienced or difficult situation. And you will want to hurl the Brahmastra at this rival, but you will not be able to because you will forget the mantra. And when you forget that mantra, he will shoot you and kill you. And that's just what happened, Mahabharat. Karna's chariot got stuck in the mud. And what happened was that it got deeper and deeper. So Karna got out. He got out from the chariot and got near the wheel and began to lift it. Meanwhile, Arjuna and Krishna were closing in. And Krishna saw, and he said to Arjuna, kill him. He said, but Krishna, he's not in the chariot. It's illegal to kill someone who's not in the chariot. I said, kill him. But it's not... Did you hear what I said? And then Karna says, yeah, it's illegal. It's wrong. It's not warrior-like. And then Krishna says, it's not warrior-like. Listen to you, the big moralist. When Draupadi was being stripped down in the assembly hall, what were you saying to Dushasan? Tear her clothes off. Make her the slave of us. Was that very moral? Do you think that was very right and proper? So Karna couldn't say anything. And then he uttered a batch of different immoral things that Karna had done. And Karna just had to drop his head. And then Krishna turned to Arjuna, kill him. After Arjuna heard all those things recapped, he then killed him right then and there. And the point is at that point, I should say, Karna tried to remember the mantra for the Brahmastra. He could not remember it. The curse of Parashurama manifests there. There was another curse there too, which I won't get into. So the point is this, is that Parashurama had a very important job. After he killed the sons of Karta, Virya Arjuna, he then began to kill all the Kshatriyas who are demoniac, who are evil, who are wrong, who are not following the Vedic principles, setting a bad example for the general public. Such a bad example that people were lying and stealing and cheating, hoodwinking. People were committing adultery, doing all and sundry things which went against the scriptures. And so Parashurama, he simply decided he would just kill one generation, another generation. 21 generations of Kshatriyas were killed. And they finally got the message. You might say, well, why didn't Krishna just let the material energy do it? Because when you see the terrifying face of Parashurama killing, it makes a very deep, very strong impression. When you don't see it, you're seeing things happening, it's not the same. So therefore, Parashurama, he let them see him kill so many. And he did it mostly with his axe. Chopping, chopping, chopping. He had no compulsion, no remorse. They were all evil. He wanted the world, as Prabhupada says so often, to be a place where people could live peacefully, lovingly, kindly, affectionately. A world of some sensitivity. But that's the way he would have to do it. So we're all here to try to develop pure love of God. And by following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada as given to us in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, by interacting with each other in loving, kind, sweet, generous ways, by thinking less of our own desires and more of the desire of Krishna and Prabhupada, we too will arise in spiritual consciousness. Our love will fructify, and ultimately we will go back home, back to Godhead. If, of course, we try to hold back on Krishna, we try to find excuses for not serving, if we show no affection to the Lord or to the devotees, if we commit offenses as a result of envy, result of hostility, animosity, all these things will go against us. So we have this wonderful example of Parashuram, who showed by his actions that devotion to duty done with love and submission, surrender, is the way to go home, go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you.